Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is the Weekly Comics Spotlight number 222 for comics originally released on November 9th, 2011. And you know, Bob, I thought we might do a all number two issues, but you know, there just aren't that many these days. There's too many number threes over at DC, and yeah. It would have been hard.
We got a one, a two, and a three.
Yeah, so we covered the bases.
Do them in reverse order. We go 3-2-1.
That works. That works. So starting us off in DC is Superboy number three. You know, this is one that the art style is really clicking with me. They did a couple interesting things in this issue with Superboy. And one of the ones that, I'll be honest, I have mixed feelings about was this whole I need to think about my powers before I can use them aspect. And I'm like, well, that's one way to prevent Superboy from being, you know, quote unquote, too powerful. And with Kryptonian power set, that's pretty easy to be too powerful. And it almost struck me as a riff on kind of like Ultra Boy from the Legion of Superheroes, who could like consciously switch between powers. I mean, Superboy looks like he can use multiple at a time, but you know, you sneak up on him, whack him from behind seems possible too. So it's like, okay, that kind of makes sense. And they've been progressing the story. I mean, one of the things that just seems a little odd about this title is the first issue ended on a note that clearly set up a Superboy Teens Titan conflict. And as of the end of this issue, we've yet to get to it. And I'm okay with that because I'm enjoying what they're doing. But they also sort of set expectations that they're not quite meeting yet. So it's kind of a odd situation there. I mean, I'm not saying, oh, get to it immediately sort of a thing, but it makes me question why they ended the first issue the way they did.
Yeah, this issue for me, and I like the series. Mm-hmm. This issue, there were multiple points where I was just like losing my thread on what the heck was going on.
Really?
Yeah.
Where?
You got this couple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're going off and doing something. Then you flip to Superboy and he's in some lava. And I didn't remember how he got in the lava or why he was in the lava. And he spent like three pages there, which I don't know that was completely necessary. Then we get the scene, you know, with Fairchild and I guess Rose Wilson.
In fairness, they haven't called her Fairchild yet.
Well, she had a badge that said Fairchild on the first issue, so.
Okay, fair enough. And I agree. It almost certainly is Caitlin Fairchild, formerly of Gen 13, pre-Flashpoint, or in the Wildstorm universe, whatever. So yeah, they're doing quite a bit with her here, and I felt they kind of moved her mystery plotline or whatever forward a bit, which I liked.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, so, you know, they have that scene, and then we're back to the couple, and they're making out. And Superboy comes bursting into the scene. The flow of the story, I was just kind of like, what is going on here? You know, just to some extent. And then, you know, especially since they had the virtual reality stuff. Although, as far as I can tell, nothing in this issue was virtual reality. It was all really happening. But it just, somehow the story didn't completely flow for me.
One of the things with that couple that kind of confused me was, well, actually, I guess this is a different couple there at the end than at the beginning.
Is it? I thought it was the same couple.
He's got short blonde hair in the first scene and long brown hair in the second scene. She's got like shoulder length or whatever blonde hair in the first scene. In the second
one,
she's got two braids that go further down. But at first, I mean, until like just now, I was thinking
that's true.
Their
hair color is switched, so it is different. Well, see, and even there, I'm like,
yeah, that goes towards the unclarity.
I mean, I just was going along, and I'm like reading this stuff, and it's like, what? Wait a minute, what? And then, like, all of a sudden, she's apparently like some bulked up lava girl or something, or is that some different girl that came in? Maybe that's the first girl, because you see those people in the store where it looked like they were kind of burned up. But
I took this to be somebody different from either of those two girls, because when Superboy is in the lava, we see her at the bottom of the page opposite the Big Bang Theory ad.
Okay. But you see what I'm saying. It's just like,
oh, yeah.
There were, it's just, I was having a hard time following the thread of this issue. And, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, I should just pay attention more. But on the other hand, I don't think it should be that hard to follow the plot thread of a comic book.
Well, I also got confused when Superboy seemed to be out in the middle of nowhere, having encountered the couple making out. And then at the end of that fight scene with the lava girl, suddenly there's a crowd forming because he's in the city. I mean, there are a couple of things like that where the flow of the story, I mean, while I was reading it, frankly, it didn't really bother me. But now that you're mentioning these things, I completely see what you're saying. And I agree. The flow of the story in a couple of places didn't quite work. The problem I had prior to this discussion right now was, how come the couple in the first scene seemed to have powers, because you got all those kind of atomic skull, you know, smoke and head things, and then in the second scene they seem to be, you know, fragile little regular humans. Obviously it's a different couple, that would explain that. But, you know, while they did a good job with a couple of aspects, like with the Fairchild Rose stuff and with some of Superboy, you know, the power set and stuff, I agree that the flow of the story in this issue, I'm going to say, is markedly inferior to how it had been in the previous two. Because I thought they had some pretty tight writing there, and things held together very well.
Right. And again, that's the kind of stuff that I would kind of expect an editor, you know, to kind of say, you know, the story flow is a little unclear here. Why don't we do X, Y, and Z to, you know, tighten this up and make the story flow a little clearer. But apparently that's not what editors do anymore.
Well, I wonder if the editors are reading more for enjoyment than for strengthening and shoring up the story. Because as I was going through this, even as I had a bit of an analytical eye going through for review purposes this issue, I didn't notice some of those things. I would like to think if I were actually editing this issue, I'd be going through it with a fine-tooth comb, saying, hey, here's some weaknesses in the story and whatever. Maybe not all of them get fixed, maybe they do, whatever, but at least pointing them out to where in future issues those sorts of things don't happen. So, you know, it's a title I am enjoying. I think they're doing some good stuff. Again, I like how the reveal with Red being Fairchild is, I mean, it's kind of telegraphed, but kind of not. Depends if you're in the know or not. But they're also throwing out a couple of other little tidbits that are tantalizing. Rose being apparently telepathic, I found very interesting. It seemed to be a bit of a change from her precognitive abilities pre-Flashpoint. But it's something that every issue I feel we're getting kind of a layer peeled off the onion and getting to see more of this corner of the new DC Universe. And I like that, you know, constant revelation without the shock and awe kind of a thing. And it's moving at a comfortable pace. You know, it's something where I think this Superboy title is very different from previous Superboy titles and characters, but not like completely alien to them either. It kind of captures the core sensibility, if not the specifics, of both the Superman as a boy and the Connor Kent version. So, I mean, I agree that this one had some definite weak points. They could have reestablished a few things a lot better, and a stronger editorial hand could have really helped this issue a lot. But even having said that, I thought it was markedly above average and very enjoyable and well done.
No, it was still a good issue. I mean, and you know, of the, I'm enjoying all the Superman family books. So it's a strong book. You know, the art really, really complements the characters and the situations. You know, the lack of clarity stuff, it knocks it down, you know, from being a perfect book, you know, for me. But, you know, I would give it like a low 4, mostly because of the clarity things. I mean, otherwise it would be a strong or a high 4.
I can see that. I was at the 4 category. I certainly am not going to knock it down based on the points you bring up, but I completely agree that they are very, very valid points, and that weakens, you know, how strong of a 4 it was for me.
Right. And that was with me. I wasn't going to knock it down to a 3 because of it. But, you know, it's not like knocking on the door of being a 5 either because of those, you know, issues. And, yeah. You know, I didn't feel confused reading either of the previous two issues. So, you know, that it's just something different here.
I will say, though, that the other two were stronger. And I hope this was just maybe an off month for the writer or something, and that next issue it kind of picks back up.
He's writing a lot of stuff. So,
yeah.
Okay, you want to move to, next we can do If we're going in reverse order, we'd go 3-2, and this one's kind of a DC connection because it's IDW and DC, right?
Uh-huh.
Star Trek and the Legion of Superheroes, number 2. We didn't do number 1. I forget why. Something else happened that week? Or
I got mine a week late.
Oh, that's right. Your delivery was delayed.
Yeah, DCBS, I don't know what happened. They shipped it to me the next week, but yeah. I'll admit, flat out, I'm coming at this a little bit biased on a couple of counts. One, I'm a Star Trek fan. Two, I'm a Legion fan. Three, I consider Jeff and Phil Moy friends. I hang out with them every year at San Diego. I know they've got good reference on the original classic Trek Enterprise bridge, because a couple of years back at San Diego, we did the Star Trek experience when it was in Balboa Park, and that was kind of fun. So...
Well,
you know, this.
I like Star Trek and the Legion, but I do not have the Jeff and Phil Moy connection because you never introduced me to them. So
I hardly ever see you on the floor at the convention center in San Diego. You could easily spend most of that week a mile away from me and still be in the same room.
But I think they do a good job on the mashup here. I will say, though, this is something where if you're not a really strong fan of at least one of these properties or a moderate fan of both of these properties, you know, it's really not the kind of book that you probably want to be picking up.
I would not use this as an intro to the Legion and to Star Trek both.
Right.
Yeah. I think familiarity with both is assumed, but it's not like you've got to have a PhD in either.
You don't, but there's stuff that goes on that, you know, you're just going to lose a lot in the translation if you're not at least vaguely familiar with, you know, what the status quo and the deal is with, you know, the original Star Trek series and the Legion.
It's kind of like going on an Easter egg hunt and not being able to see Easter eggs.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a fun day, but it's just not the same. I mean, I love this opening scene because it kind of goes to your point there. I mean, it shows how the amalgamated DC universe, classic Trek universe, kind of slam together. You got the Organians and the Controllers. You've got the Kund and the Klingons at war. You've got, you know, the whole bit with the Tyraz and the Borg or whatever. I actually had to look that one up. I was pretty sure it hooked into the Legion Foetir or whatever, but I had to check to be sure. And he'd like converted a artificial planet to a mobile attack platform. It's like, okay, that kind of fits with the Borg. So it was showing where there are some similarities in the universe and kind of mashing them up again, much like the Amalgam universe did with DC and Marvel. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, and Chris Roberson, you know, I interviewed him, you know, about this when it was solicited. I mean, he's a hardcore fan on both of these and really knows what he's doing here. And it shows when he does it, because it's just he has the characterizations down really nicely, I think, for all the characters in here. He's doing the mashup really nicely between, you know, like you were just describing, the different elements of the Trek and Legion universes. And, you know, the story's kind of moving apace. I mean, it didn't feel like it was moving too slow. But, you know, it's just, this issue, you know, it's a number 2 issue of a 5-issue series. I think it's 5 issues.
6.
6 issues of a 6-issue series. So, I mean, you know, there's some amount of setup still going on here. But we're kind of moving all the pieces into position, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because this is all about the Imperial planets, which is very similar to but not identical to the Terran Empire or the Mirror Universe. And in this issue, they really kind of explain it. It's like, well, remember the Mirror Universe? It's kind of like that, but different. Here's where it's, you know, how it's different. And actually, that exposition comes out very naturally and helpfully at the right places and stuff. So, you know, I really like that. I was a little surprised that the Legion and the Enterprise crew still haven't really interacted as of this issue. I mean, certainly we're going to see that next issue, because it kind of ends on the note where it's like, how can it not?
Well, they kind of ended on the standard, hey, let's set it up so that they, like, take a couple of shots at each other.
Well, it almost ended on that High Noon, you know, at the Western Draw kind of a thing, you know. You can almost hear that kind of music playing as the gun shooters on the one side face off on the other or what have you.
I'll be curious to see, you know, as they actually start directly interacting, you know, getting like some Brainiac 5 and Spock and, you know, these kind of matchups.
Well, and kind of who they kind of try to pair off with who and what similarities they try to draw.
Because that's an obvious one, but the other ones are not quite as obvious. I guess if people haven't been picking this up. The Legion that we've got in this is Shadow Lass, Saturn Girl, Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, Chameleon Boy, and Brainiac 5. And
which, you know, if you think about it and look at the panel below, because I'm looking at the last page where they got them lined up that way. Under Shadow Lass, you essentially have Uhura. Saturn Girl, you've got Sulu. You've got Cosmic Boy, the leader, under Kirk, the leader. You've got Brainiac 5, the logical guy, under Spock, the logical guy. You've got the somewhat acerbic or whatever Lightning Lad under, you know, with McCoy beneath him. Chameleon Boy with Chekhov. Chekhov, you know, the Russians invented everything, almost the cultural chameleon, if you will. So, I mean, it may be that those are the parallels they're going to draw. It may be a totally different way.
Yeah, and Scotty, because it was out of balance, he's back on the Enterprise. Doesn't really appear in the story, even though they have him on the inside of the front cover.
Yeah. Now, what I really liked is it made sense to choose this group of Legionnaires, because it's kind of around the Great Darkness saga for them. All of these guys have powers that are pretty much Star Trek compatible. You know, we've seen telepathy and shape-shifting in the original series. I'm pretty sure we've seen things like, you know, throwing lightning bolts around, magnetic powers and stuff. Even if we hadn't seen them in the original Trek or even subsequent ones, it's stuff that doesn't seem like it would feel out of place.
Yeah, it's not like you got, like, Mon-El or Ultra Boy or something like that that are, or Matter Eater Lad or something.
Yeah, so it's, I considered that, you know, to be a nice, again, assembly of the Legionnaires that would fit in well. The other thing I'm really enjoying here is, you know, the Moys have a little bit of a manga influence to their art style. So it's something that I think for some readers they might not like it. Personally, I enjoy it. It goes back to the Legionnaires days. Because the Moys are, I think, among the very few artists that have drawn both Star Trek stuff and Legion stuff. And with their Star Trek characters, when you see Spock, when you see Kirk, when you see McCoy, they look like Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. But, I mean, I've seen some other artists who, when they're doing those kind of likenesses, their art kind of, you know, it stiffens up. The movement, the energy or whatever kind of goes away. It's like, okay, you could see where they spent a little time, you know, looking at a photo, trying to get the likeness just right or whatever. Whereas I don't feel that here. It still feels like very comic book art. But it's just like Leonard Nimoy would have been the right guy to have cast for this character back in the day kind of a thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they're recognizable, but they're not like photo traced or anything like that. You know, it's like
it's like comic book art versions of the
exactly.
Character.
I mean, they're just not completely photorealistic, you know, copies of the faces, which I think is better.
Mm-hmm. But I've had other comics in the past where it's like, okay, you know, these are just generic characters called Kirk, Spock, and McCoy or what have you. So it's nice they're recognizable without being almost cliche or whatever. Now, the one question I have for you, because I've got a couple of guesses, at the end of the opening scene where we've got the whole, propaganda thing being filmed at the Emperor's palace, we see the bottom half of the Emperor's face.
Yes.
I'm thinking that's either Universo, Spock, or there's a slim chance it's Zod somehow. But my guess is mainly Spock with Universo as a possibility. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, the bearded Spock from the Mirror Mirror, although this is a different universe, it could be an analog to that. Could be Vandal Savage, too.
Ooh, hadn't thought of Vandal Savage. That's an interesting one. I can see that, too. You know, I like how they're teasing, you know, well, obviously we've got an Emperor. I wonder who he is, you know, kind of thing. So I'm really enjoying this series.
Because while they don't go right into it, you know, one thing I was thinking there is that they do talk about how this kind of empire has been going on for a really long time. You know, they
yeah,
go
like
back
the Romans.
And, you know, if it was Vandal Savage, he could have been the emperor that whole time.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why it made perfect sense when you mentioned it to me. I just hadn't even considered him. I mean, I went with the more obvious ones. But yeah, Vandal Savage, I think, definitely an interesting and strong possibility. It's clear that the creative team on this, both the Chris Roberson on the writing and the Moys on the art, have a definite love of both properties and have just done a great job kind of mashing them together in a very fun way. So, I mean, for me, this is a very strong 4 out of 5. One or two things between this and the first issue that so far preventing me from giving it that 5 out of 5. Again, I was really hoping that the teams would meet already. And there were a couple of things where it was a little confusing as to how far apart they had kind of crash-landed in this timeline. Were they just across the courtyard from each other on the other side of a building, or were they half a continent apart? Not big deals, but, I mean, I'm certainly thinking that by the end of this run, the series overall will be a 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, and I gave it the 5. I thought, you know, it had everything I was looking for. It didn't have anything that really bothered me at all. You know, it just, the seamlessness that Roberson has been able to merge these guys into a storyline, and, you know, just like the mashup of the characters too, is really well done. It deserves top marks. But again, you know, that's from someone who likes both the Legion and the Star Trek properties, you know, so yeah. Definitely this is something, like I said, that your mileage may vary, you know, on this one.
Well, it's funny because you compare it to like the Star Trek X-Men stuff done back in the day or whatever. This is so, so much better than that, because these characters feel like they fit in this world. Now, part of it is we're not seeing, you know, them on the bridge of the Enterprise, whereas we saw Wolverine there, and that just kind of felt a little out of place, too.
Yeah.
So the story is playing to the strengths of the characters well. So definitely looking forward to the rest of this. Highly recommend this stuff. Great, great stuff.
And we get down to our number one issue. This is an interesting one. We've got Avenging Spider-Man number one. The digital code controversy, I guess I'll say, issue. Every issue comes polybagged. Every issue has got a digital code on the inside of the back cover that you can redeem for a free digital copy of the comic to go along with the $3.99 cover price, you know, for this. And what I did was I downloaded it and I read it first time. I just read it digital, you know, since they're kind of pushing the digital.
Well, let's be clear on one thing. When you did that on digital, you did that on your computer.
On my
right?
computer, that's correct.
Okay, because for my way of thinking, there are four ways you could have consumed this issue. One is the way you did on the computer. The second is obviously the print, you know, version we've got. I've got a Asus Transformer tablet, a Google tablet, so I downloaded it, redeemed the code and all that, and did it there. And then there's also, you could do it on like your cell phone or something.
I cannot imagine reading a comic on a cell phone. It's just, my eyes are not good enough for that.
They do a pan and scan.
Even with that, I mean, because they were doing pan and scan on my computer as well. And the double page spreads and the splash pages, I mean, they just don't fit on the screen, you know, in the, even in full screen mode, well. And they kind of pan, you know, they show you the thing at first and the text is kind of too small to read, and then they kind of zoom in and kind of pan around on it. It's
interesting because I pulled it up on the computer. Maybe I just have a bigger monitor or my eyesight hasn't faded quite as much yet. But I could read the captions and stuff even on the double page spreads, and a couple of them were, you know, a bit small, and it certainly helps to go full screen and whatever. But it's one of those things where I really think the experience differs just enough between the four different presentation formats to be very interesting and color the experience in some cases literally, and that we're also at a point where, since we're still at the infancy of digital comics, I mean, the double page spreads were something I really noticed when reading it on the Transformer, because it's like, okay, I got to rotate the whole device, go look at it. It's still not quite as big. You know, when I rotated the thing, it was still like a 6 inches, 6.5 inches wide by like 5.25 inches tall double page spread compared to like the 10.5 inches wide and 8 inches tall physical comic. So it is one of those things where at times it feels like you're getting the smaller version, or you're looking at it through a telescope or whatever. You know, it's something that I found very interesting, particularly when you would go from a double page spread, which on some of the devices filled the screen, you'd go to the next panel and it would be just that panel or whatever. I think that was on my phone, and that single panel was bigger than a double page splash.
Yeah, maybe you've, I mean, because I've got a wide screen monitor. It's like about a 19-inch monitor. But I'm looking at it now, and I see the double page spread. The text is really, and I'm getting pretty close. I mean, if I really tried, I could read it, but it's not particularly clear.
Which double page spread are you on?
I'm on the one with Spider-Man and the big robot. You know, Spider-Man's kind of
doing the oh right bit.
Yeah, kind of like very sketchily drawn in the bottom corner there.
Oh, certainly in the bottom right corner when they can't even riff with the giant robot line, that's tiny. And that's something where I'm thinking the visual language of comics is going to change with digital.
Well, interestingly, when I'm looking at the double page spread here, and I'm holding the comic here in my hand, and I'm looking at the thing on the screen, right?
Yeah.
They have, and maybe it's just a problem with the browser, but like the word balloons that go with Spider-Man in that panel where it says, let's call a spade, you know, et cetera, in the inset panel on the right. For some reason, those are being displayed in the center of the screen over Thor's hammer.
And that's just on yours because I'm looking at it and it looks fine.
Okay.
But that goes to technical problems.
Right, because I'm using Firefox. You know, it says, oh, use the Google Chrome browser for this. And I'm not going to install the Google Chrome browser on my machine to
Had already installed Google Chrome, so that's what I use. But yes.
You know, it's like I am not going to install some extra browser just to look at this comic book. So I guess, you know, I was going to say, you know, that there are some problems if you don't want to, you know, have to install the Google Chrome browser to view your Marvel comics, which, you know, Firefox is a very popular browser. It seems like they should be able to get it to work.
I would agree with that, and I was surprised reading through their website how certain comics seem to be available in certain formats, but not necessarily in all of them. Because, like, for this, on that same page where we've got those inset panels, on the phone version, it starts zoomed in kind of on the Hulk and Spider-Man there on the left, then it pulls out, and then it goes into the first inset panel, then it scrolls down to the next, and then the next or whatever. And that obviously takes time to go figure out, okay, how are we going to position this to where it would work on a smaller screen? That's manual effort above and beyond the actual comic book production stuff. And it goes towards we're still in the, are we going pan and scan? Are we letterboxing? What are we doing? And how long does it take to get each comic available in each format? Because the version we're looking at on the computer isn't the same even as what I have on my Google pad, because things like that two-page credits thing that's after the marathon runners you know, trampled or whatever, on the Google thing, on the pad, let me pull that up real quick, it is like the first thing they show after the cover.
Really?
Yeah. And we don't get things like the Avengers Sanction preview, yet I'm pretty sure on this on the computer version we do. And then we've got the move the cursor around and you get these highlighted areas and stuff on the computer version, which I didn't, well, obviously I wasn't moving a cursor around. Don't really have that on the Android device. But it makes for a different experience. Not necessarily better or worse, but, you know, it colors the context. And I certainly found on some of the two-page spreads that didn't have a lot of dialogue, it was fine. Some that had a lot of text to read, that got kind of annoying. You know, yes, you can zoom in and all that stuff, and I could zoom in on my Android device here to about twice the size of the printed comic, it seemed like, but I like just the flipping the pages thing. And that was something on the computer drove me nuts. You click that button to go to the next page, it draws kind of an arbitrary line somewhere and kind of does a digital flip on that, and it's not in the center of the image where it would flip the page on the comic. And maybe that's just me and my insanity or whatever, but that just annoyed me. The one thing that I think is a very big difference is if you go near the end or whatever, where that big monster comes up and starts to try to, like, swallow the Hulk and Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
On the print version, the purple tongue and the red Hulk, not going to say they were identically colored because they weren't, but they kind of blur together a little. It's not that distinguishable. Yet on the digital version, and this is going from, are you printing color or are you projecting color? You know, it was a lot more obvious, the color differences there. You know, the Hulk, I think, stood out a lot better from the purple tongue, or tongues, I guess. And that's something that I think with a lot of not a lot, I'm going to say almost every colorist and stuff doing their stuff digitally on the computer screen. We've seen a couple of cases where stuff just doesn't print quite the way they expected. And now we can see a little bit more of kind of what they expected. So, I mean, it's clearly the same colors, but just a difference in, I don't know, saturation or whatever.
I will say, you know, going to the actual story that we got. I mean, it was a good story. I liked the story. But when I got to the end of it, I was kind of like, wait a minute, is that all that there was in this issue? And it's 22 pages. It's just when I go back and I look at it, I mean, there's so many splash pages, double page spreads. I mean, I don't think he has more than about 5 panels is like the max that he hits on any page. You know, there's just not that much space in here to be telling a story. You know, it's...
Well, and then you start with what's essentially a throwaway gambit with, you know, the Avengers fighting this big robot that really has nothing to do with the story, but just sets up why the Hulk and Spider-Man are hanging out. You know? And it's like you took 4 or 5 pages away out of the however many you had in the full thing for that? And I'm going to go with however many pages you had, because I didn't actually count in the print version, but, you know, digitally it was telling me about 23 pages or whatever. That may have included the cover or the credits page even.
Yeah, I think they count the credits page, whereas I didn't count the credits page.
And I would agree with that. However, I then went through the story and counted how many swipes I had to do, how many page turns or whatever. And that way, since the double page spreads are one image, it got it down to about 19 story pages. And, I mean, for a casual non-comic fan reader, they're going to say, well, I got about 19 images. It cost me $3.99 if they bought it digitally. Are they going to think that's a good value or not?
I mean, I can see, you know, hey, getting it free along with the comic, you know, what the heck.
But, oh, yeah, you know, totally for that, yeah.
But even buying the comic, you know, it's like, I'm pretty much not going to be buying this past issue number one because while I thought it was okay, I'm not like the biggest Joe Madureira fan in the world. I mean, I like him fine. It's just, you know, he's not like, ooh, you know, Joe Mad. I love his work, you know, and there are people like that. And, you know, that's great. But, you know, it seemed really light for a $3.99 book.
I completely agree. What was here was good, but not great. But there just wasn't much here.
I think it's mostly, I mean, like, kind of like the Star Trek Legion thing. You know, it's like if you're a huge Joe Mad fan, you know, boy, you're going to eat this up with a spoon. It's like, you'll love it. Well, and, you know, the what you get is great. But
the difference I would say between this and the Star Trek Legion thing is I thought there was a lot more story in those pages than we got here.
No, the only comparison I was trying to make was that, you know, that's a book that is going to be much more appreciated by people who are huge Star Trek and Legion of Superheroes fans.
Oh, totally,
this is a book that will be far better appreciated by people who are huge Joe Mad fans.
Totally, totally. You know, if you're part of the target audience, either by a property or by a creator or by whatever, that always helps.
Yeah.
I did think that while the art was great, it was just gratuitous with the double page splashes, the big panels and stuff like that. The opening sequence didn't really, you know, add to the story much.
I do think Joe Mad got very creative in, you know, the way he can, you know, the way he does like a little inset panel with a full page splash where he gets a little extra storytelling on there, but he'll still be able to sell that page for, you know, $1,000 or something because it's like, you know, like the page with the Hulk and Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
Standing next to each other with all Spider-Man's got the webs going, and there's like the two little inset panels, one with like the Moloid and Jameson and the other one with that, you know, Moloid Pied Piper guy. You know, it's like you got an extra couple of story panels in there, but he'll sell that like it's a full page splash, you know, and get some ungodly amount of money for it, you know. So,
well, it's funny you mentioned that page because that was one of the ones where the pan and scan on the cell phone just didn't work for me. Because they kind of start in the upper left, get those couple of dialogue balloons, kind of spread out a little, and then, you know, go into the inset. And when they try to get the full thing so you can see all of the Hulk, you get a little at the bottom panel before you should. And it doesn't destroy the flow of the comic, but it changes it. Because, again, they're trying to steer your direction. And for some people, they love that because it helps, you know, figure out the proper reading order. And in some comics, that's not as obvious. So I thought this was interesting. I liked it. I thought it was just the start of the story. I liked getting the digital copy free. I would love it if DC and Marvel just did that across the board. If I could be taking my DCBS shipment, you know, when I get it and put it onto my Aces Transformer, have that with me at work and just read a couple of comics as I'm waiting for traffic to die down, I would do that. Not going to pay extra for that privilege. But I do think this is a case where Marvel is trying to use this free digital copy thing to kind of counter DC's day and date line wide in the DC Universe approach. And, you know, we'll see how that, you know, that battle plays out.
What did you think about, you know, this going, there's no inker on this. This is colored directly on top of Joe Mad's pencils. Did you notice that at all? Did that bother you at all?
Did not really notice that at all. Yeah, didn't faze me. I'm flipping through it now on the print version just to see if there was anything.
Not every panel, but on some panels, it's... And it's a little more apparent when it zooms in the panels on the digital version.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's like he's a little loose on his pencils. And it comes across, a little sketchy around the edges.
I would agree with that, and I did feel that way while I was reading it. But it never occurred to me to look to see if this was inked or not. I took that just as a artistic style. So I didn't really have any problem with that. I do think, in terms of those production values and stuff, the art directors at certainly Marvel and DC and even Image and other companies really ought to be educating their colorists on the difference of how things look on the screen when they're doing it or how we're reading it that way and how those books actually print. I'm sure if we were to have seen a digital version of like that Batman Inc. that we saw that was digitally, you know, computer generated and stuff, we probably would have noticed a lot more in the art than printed out well in a couple of pages, because you remember how we were talking about it was a little too dark in some spots. And certainly there are some other, you know, just regularly done comics that we've complained, gosh, it's too dark, it's too muted, it's whatever. And maybe those things pop better on the computer screen. But I don't know, because I haven't seen them that way.
Yeah.
I did like how the digital copy ended with a, hey, there's another issue coming out next month. I did find it entertaining that it was just in December. Versus a December this date, come check it out, or hey, click here to let me know when it comes out.
Of note for people is that, you know, Joe Mad, he's not somebody who can do a monthly comic. So I think this arc is probably already done.
He can do a monthly comic. Well, two in a row, however.
He's not on this book after issue 3. Issue 4 has been solicited. Well, it's online. And Greg Land is coming on for that arc. And then I guess maybe the next arc after that, Joe Mad will come back because he'll have had, you know, some extra time to, build up. So it's like I think he's going to probably be doing at best every other arc on this book.
Well, if that's what it takes, that's fine. I'd rather they do that than rush or have the issues be late or whatever, but it's a little frustrating to start a story with one artist and then have it, you know, kind of change styles throughout.
Well, I mean, I think they're going to do the story. I mean, so it'll be like he'll do this whole Spider-Man and Red Hulk story. And then issue 4, I think they're going to Spider-Man and Hawkeye or something. And that's where Greg Land comes in. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he'll do that arc with Hawkeye. And then, you know, it'll go back to Spider-Man and somebody else, you know. So you'll get like a whole... And Zeb Wells is writing all of them.
Right.
So I guess it's kind of like when Spider-Man was coming out 3 times a month and you kind of cycled through the different artists, you know, but, you had a little more, although even you were cycling through writers on that too. And I think Steve Wacker did a good job of kind of keeping that on track. But, you know, here at least, you know, you got the same writer. Zeb's going to be writing all of these. But, you know, again, you know, I might pick these up down the line, but for $3.99, it seemed very thin to me for $3.99.
I agree with that, and I felt that way having the print version it on my computer, my tablet, and my phone, and I think somebody who got any one of those and not all of them or whatever, like just got digital and not the print or whatever, may feel a little less satisfied. this is one where very much kind of teased and started the story, but we still haven't really gotten things kicked into high gear yet.
I felt like another 6 or 8 pages would have really, you know, given us enough in this issue to make me feel satisfied. But, you know, stopping where it did, especially with the, or even if they had just done 22 pages, but there was a little more story content, you know, in there because, you know, there were less giant splash pages and everything. But I know that people love seeing the giant splash pages and big panoramic scenes and stuff, which is fine. But, you know, it's like if I get a bunch of 2-page splashes, it takes something away from, you know, the fact that my 22-page story is suddenly a 19-page story, you know. I think that, you know, you get a certain artistic and, you know, reader satisfaction from the scope of seeing all these moloids running across the bridge here and a big 2-page thing. If that was just like a little panel, it wouldn't have quite the same impact. So I can see that. But, you know, at the same time, you know, if you're going to be throwing in those big things that eat up pages, you know, throw in a couple of extra pages to bring the story parity, you know, in there.
No, exactly. Because, I mean, those 2 pages is roughly 10% of the story, you know, and is that one moment 10% as in, of the importance of the story, or, you know, however else you would want to qualify it that way.
These moloids, man, they're very popular in the Marvel Universe lately. It's like they were running around over in the Hulk, and it seems like they've been in other places lately, too, you know?
Yeah, they, particularly having shown up in the other Hulk book, well, in the Hulk book, whereas this is obviously Spider-Man's book, but it just seemed a little coincidental. And that, again, goes towards, gee, shouldn't editors be trying to, you know, avoid stuff like that? But, you know, for me, this was a, it was an alright book. It was average. I didn't think it really showcased Spidey all that well. Not that poorly, either. But it didn't have anything that really kind of got it out, story-wise, out of the average. So for me, it was a 3 out of 5. Certainly, you know, I had lots of thoughts and discussion points here on the print versus digital and all that stuff. But in terms of the story, it was just kind of there.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I enjoyed the issue. I mean, what I got out of it, I felt was a 4 out of 5. But, you know, I, at the same time, you know, value for my money, you know, is like about a 3 out of 5. And it's kind of not across the threshold that would cause me to add this book to my personal pull list. But, you know, I enjoyed the art and I enjoyed the story. It was good. It was just too little of it.
So if
this was a $2.99 book, it would be on my pull list.
Got it. But if I were to push for a single rating, not a 3 out of 4.
I will give it a 4.
4, okay.
Artistically, it was a 4, so I'll give it the 4. But, you know, kind of for me, it didn't, even though it was a 4, it didn't get on my pull list.
Interesting. I can see that, though.
You know, and I think that played into, you know, when I was dropping books like the Avengers books. You know, if those books were $2.99, maybe I wouldn't mind if Bendis had, you know, a bunch of talking head pages in there. You know, but it kind of drops down when it's a $3.99 book and I start getting a little less enjoyment out of various facets of it, you know.
Okay, I can totally understand that. Even if it's good, that doesn't mean it's necessarily right for you or worth being on your pull list.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't have time for it. Maybe it doesn't have the return on the investment for the price they're charging. I totally get that.
So I read a couple of other number one issues this week. And, you know, I read Battle Scars number one from Marvel, which is sort of a follow-on, I guess, out of Fear Itself, although
I haven't gotten to that one yet.
Tenuous at best. It was an okay story. It wasn't good enough for me to add it to my pull list. I thought it was okay. I didn't find anything particularly wrong with it. It was interesting, but, you know, it was kind of just there. And then another one was the PC Cast House of Night number one from Dark Horse. It was only $1. You know, so it was really cheap. So I thought, oh, you know, I'll try that one out. You know, it was, you know, through DCBS, I think it was $0.25. You know, so the thing with it was it's based on the series of novels that PC Cast, I guess, is the writer, this House of Night novels. And this is in that same topic that we're going on, if you're a fan of and have read the House of Night novels, I think you'll really enjoy this, right? I have never read House of Night. I had never heard of PC Cast, particularly as an author. And this comic is, you know, in the little blurb in it, it says this happens between the scenes in novel number 2 of the House of Night series. And it's like, I was kind of lost on what was going on. And I think that, you know, if I read those books, you know, it'd be kind of like if they did a Harry Potter comic book set between the scenes of, you know, Goblet of Fire or something. And, you know, somebody who'd never read a Harry Potter book or seen a Harry Potter movie in their life picked the thing up and tried to, you know, get, you know, they'd have a completely different experience from someone who's a fan of that, you know, novel series and, you know, yeah, world. So, I mean, again, it wasn't something that I thought was poorly done. It just wasn't for me. And it was one that, you know, I think that if somebody's read those books, they might get a lot out of it.
I've only read a couple of things so far. Because of the way my shipment was this week, I had so few indie books that I figured I'd just take care of kind of the out of the main universe stuff first. So I read Artifacts, Dollhouse, Knights of the Dinner Table, Unwritten, Ultimate Comics, Spider-Man. But the one I read that I really enjoyed and really recommend to any fan of pretty much any version of Robin was, Batman Brave and the Bold number 13, from the DC Kids line. Basically, the Phantom Stranger enlists the different Robins from across time to save Batman, and it was a fun story. I really enjoyed it. Obviously, it's in the tone and the style of the cartoon series, but not in any kind of an obnoxious way. If you're just looking for a, think of it as more of a very all ages with a little more skewed towards kids, but not solely at kids, than your average comic. So definitely recommend that one.
I always like a good Phantom Stranger story.
Well, I'm a big fan of Robin, and seeing all the different versions of him kind of compared and contrasted was really fun. And they had a nice little bit at the end there that I don't want to spoil, that it's like if they wanted to do that, there's a story idea kind of pitched there or whatever. It's like I'd pick that issue up too. So it was fun stuff.
Very cool.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me this week.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss My Greatest Adventure number 2 from DC, Avengers Academy number 22 from Marvel, and Morning Glories number 14 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.